Hello and welcome to this postseason version of Vikings Territory Breakdown with myself, Joe Oberle, senior writer at Vikings Territory PurplePTS.com, and Mark Craig from the Star Tribune, StarTribune.com. There's really not much to talk about seasons.
Nothing happened the last couple of days.
You should have taken the week off. Well, I don't want to bury the lead and talk about the Bears game. I will mention a couple things later. But, Mark, got to hear it from you because you were in the belly of the beast, or you saw it. You were there on Sunday after the whole thing went down. But Mike Zimmer, after 8 years, is gone, and so is Rick Spielman after 16 years with the organization. What are your thoughts about what we just saw happen?
First of all, you mentioned the Bears. That reminded me of something. The late Gene Harrington, first interview done after the Love Boat incident. Dante Culpepper comes in, and Gene always kicked off the questions. And Gene said, "Hey, Dante, you want to talk about the Bears or the boat?" And Dante said, "The Bears." So, but we won't do that in this case. I'm not saying that if Zim and Spielman had stayed on, they could have made the playoffs next year, maybe not made the playoffs next year. But my feeling is, even though I like both guys, I wasn't calling for their heads and, blood and being mad at them and everything. But I do admit that the Wilfs had to make this move. Both of these guys were given more than ample time to win a Super Bowl or get to a Super Bowl. Zimmer was ranked seventh on seniority in the NFL among coaches. The six ahead of him all had won a Super Bowl. It was time. And it's you look at the NFL, the way things are going. Now Sean McVay, 35 years old, is now the eighth. He ranks eighth in seniority among NFL coaches. So then he was hired in 2017. So
8 years.
Go ahead. It was a good run. Spielman had longer than that. They had their chance. It didn't work out. It's time to move on. That's how I think even the people who like those two guys feel.
I mean, 8 years in a NFL coach's lifetime or career is a long time. It's certainly enough time to get something to change an organization. And when Zimmer first came in, he took a really bad defense and turned it around real quickly and had everybody behind him. And I think, they built and crescendoed and then they started going the other way. And I don't know, do you feel like Mike Zimmer might even feel relieved somewhat? I mean, cause it was his career was marked by some amazing events. You know, you talked about the Love Boat, but we could go down the list of the things that happened during his tenure. And, at some point, I mean, he's got a contract he's going to get paid two more years for. He's got his personal life is in pretty good shape by the sounds of it. He's got some grandkids and everything else. You know, the guy almost looked like he was dying with this job, physically. And it might even have been a relief to say, okay, thank you.
Well, when I talked to him before the season, I hit him with all the do you feel like you're coaching for your job questions. And he said, no, I'm going to finish out my contract, which has two more years after this year. And I'm going to, then I'm going to decide. Well, kind of figured that he didn't win. It wouldn't be his decision. And one thing he did say to me was, the only thing I don't want to do is die in this job. And he goes, I don't want my kids to walk in and find me dead trying to handle this job.
Interesting.
And that to me is, I'm not saying it would have happened, but his age, the stress, the amount of stress that was put on him through the two COVID seasons, these last 2 years have really worn him down. I think that it's better for him as well as for the Vikings that he moves on, takes a break. You know, it's not like a guy at Walmart. He made some reference to the lawn guy doesn't get criticized, or his job doesn't get questioned. Well, the lawn guy, if he loses his job, he doesn't get paid millions of dollars for two more years. So, this is it's a sad time for Zimmer. It's a sad time for his family and everything that he didn't get to do what he wanted to do. But he lives in a world where he gets to go to Kentucky on the Ponderosa, and it'd be better for his health, better for him. I don't think he comes back as a head coach. I don't think guys are going to get hired at that age as head coaches. I don't know that he gets hired as a defensive coordinator. I think, and he talked about this when we talked before the season, was maybe he becomes a consultant of some sort. He'll stay in football. I think he said he's addicted to football. Can't really, doesn't see himself like just riding around his ranch in a, you know, on his ATVs and all that. So he'll be involved in football in some way, but he's going to take a, I would imagine, a nice deserved break here for his health and just for his well-being.
So what do you think happened a little, you know, to him? I mean, we talk about his, at the beginning, when he first came on, he did take the 31st worst defense in the league, turned it into top five, and then even the top one in 2017. And then, you know, criticized the whole time, paying more attention in the draft to his defense than his offensive line and maybe some of the other things. And now the offense kind of came around and surpassed him, and the defense is going back down, where in the last 2 years it finished at the very bottom. It's the 31st in a number of rankings this year. What happened there? I mean, what was it? COVID these last couple of years? Was it injuries, or was it? Did they make mistakes on who they drafted? What do you think contributed to that rise, and then now that fall?
Well, I mean, COVID or Kirk? I mean, Kirk had a little pretty big chunk of coin went to Kirk. You know what happened was he came in. Okay, they were the 32nd. They were last in the NFL in points allowed. Comes in, says, I'm going to fix it. I'm a fixer. That's what I do. And he did it. But he doesn't have a big, there's not a big quarterback contract sitting there. You know, he's his defense. He built the defense. One of the first moves he made was a home run out of the park, set the tone for his defense, was Linval Joseph at nose tackle. Linval Joseph was a fantastic nose tackle that was durable and couldn't be moved and set the tone for the run defense, which made Zimmer's, all of his creativity on third down. Zimmer set a record in 2017 for the best third down percentage, 25.2%, mm-hmm. 2 or 3%. So, you know, it all started kind of from there. Well, when he did the reboot in 2020, it's Michael Pierce. Michael Pierce first takes the opt out. Then, you know, Michael Pierce is not the player that Linval Joseph is. Even in the 8 games that he played this year, he's just not that guy. Not saying that's the only decision, but to me, it's different. Like when they, in 2017, that's when he was number one in points, yards, third downs allowed. The offense was coming along with Case Keenum, journeyman at quarterback. You know, they win their division. They go to the NFC Championship game. This is their time for Zimmer to put his stamp on this team forever by winning that game at Philadelphia, playing in the Super Bowl. He's playing Nick Foles, you know, who had only played a couple games as a backup to Wentz, and they got killed. And that right there, from that moment on, their window just kept closing. Well, Kirk comes on with that big contract. I mean, if you remember at the combine, shortly before Kirk was signed, Zimmer had said something about how he didn't want to have like a big quarterback contract. He felt that they won as a team. They didn't win because they had one guy. All three of those quarterbacks, Teddy, Case, and Bradford, gone. Kirk comes in with that, you know, a record deal of a first time and ever multi-year contract is guaranteed, $84 million. Well, you know, we all said at the time, if they don't win, you know, before these defensive contracts come up, it's Zimmer's going to be in trouble defensively. Well, after the 2019 season, when they go to San Francisco and get destroyed, then all of a sudden – they're doing a total reboot on defense in 2020. They have no off season for Zimmer to get, you know, put his hands on these young corners and teach them how to play. And that first game of 2020 is a disaster. That's when Aaron Rodgers comes in. He's just laughing. Now you mix in the fact that there's no crowd. So there's U.S. Bank Stadium's there's no advantage to it there. Then all the defensive pass rush gets hurt. Danielle Hunter doesn't even play a game. So it was all of that. But the second, well, they should have won in 2007. They should have gone to the Super Bowl. But when they had a chance to get back to the playoffs in 2019, when they didn't do it there, then Kirk's contract did what we thought it would do. It dragged down the defense, and they just weren't able to recover.
Zimmer had that famous quote that it says, if this doesn't work, it'll cost me my job. That's what he said, you know, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And there we're seeing it. What do you make of the comments we've been hearing coming out of the locker room the past couple of days? Yesterday, I guess, Eric Hendricks comments about made the comments, and I'm taking it out of context a little bit, but essentially he says, I don't think a fear-based organization is the way to go. And then you have Brian O'Neill making some comments yesterday saying that he wants to see a little bit more collaboration, a little bit more communication between maybe the head coach and some of his players. We certainly saw that it took until for three or four, till the fourth season together, that Zim and Kirk Cousins actually sat down and got to know each other in a film room. But do you think that old school kind of mentality, which is, you know, you talk about Zimmer coming off the Parcells tree, man, he's got his own tree that looks just like Parcells. He's the same kind of guy, that old school gruff. And, you know, I think that's what we, you know, sense from him. Do you think that's contributed to what happened either with this team, and it will it certainly inform what they're going to do next?
Oh, well, it'll definitely inform what they do next. Not necessarily those quotes, but in all my experience of covering these, you go from a Leslie Frazier who probably never said a curse word in his adult life, gentle. He played on the 85 Bears, was a gentle guy, the kind of guy that Brian O'Neill is talking about, the kind of guy that Kendricks is talking about. He didn't win. He got fired. In comes the king of the F-bombs and you know, hell, brimstone and fire, Zimmer coming in. And when it was going good, when they were number one in the league, nobody was talking about, you know, well, you know, we need a guy that talks to us in the hallway. We need this and that. I do not poo-poo or dismiss what Eric Kendricks said, because Eric Kendricks to me is he's sort of the modern version of an old school player. I mean, there's not a better defender on that team. Even when Daniil Hunter was at his best, he would have been 2-time All-Pro if he didn't get hurt last year. So to me, it's that carries a lot of weight, because of he's a guy not only that was here with Zimmer all of Kendrick's career, but he's going to be a cornerstone going forward. And I think that what he's talking about, and there's also some comments that kind of gets lost. I mean, I think in 2016, Zimmer made a comment about the players being soft, which is like the, you know, if there's ever a one word, it's like in church, when you pass wind in church, that's the word. In the NFL, it's like you say a player, someone's soft, that's the step back moment. Hey, you crossed the line. And I think that bothered players.
And he said that as a motivator, didn't he, Mark? I mean, he thought that was a way to piss him off and make him angry and motivate.
Yeah. I think that was, you know, off the top of my head, that's one thing I remember as being kind of the, you know, his bluntness crossed the line a little bit. And then just let's face it, the last 2 years, I mean, we saw it in the media just in our little exposure to him, but I doubt that when he left us, he, you know, was like changed much. So these last 2 years really worn on him. And I think, you know, he was trying, you know, really hard to get this team to turn around the last 2 years. And I'm sure that there was led to a lot of blunt assessment of guys, probably in a team meeting setting. And I don't know, you can't be a Mike Ditka in today's NFL. So there's plenty of guys that get it done now that do it differently. And that's where I was saying, I don't know who they're going to hire, but I have a feeling he's going to be young, going to be an offensive guy, and he's going to be good with the players, and he's going to be friendly with the media. Hmm. Like I've talked to people in Cleveland that say, you know, how Kevin Stefanski went to Cleveland. People I know and trust there that I covered Belichick with said, you know, hey, Mark, it's, if you look at the transcript, it's Belichick. It's just, he's being nice about not saying anything, you know, just a different demeanor, but basically not giving you anything. So that's what I think that will happen. Now, it depends on who the general manager is and who the coach is, and do they want to take on Kirk? I would imagine Kirk has to, you know, redo his contract, but it's going to be interesting to see going forward what they do.
You're talking about you can't be a Ditka in today's NFL. There was a guy who stomped and screamed on the sidelines. We saw it here in Minnesota. Before that, Bud Grant kind of had this stoic demeanor where his players loved him and they played for him and did what he said. But I think he was not your buddy communicator guy. But he left the team. And one of his complaints at the time was he was frustrated with the athletes, the brand of athletes that were coming up. They were starting to look at things differently. I mean, he had thing with Alan Page where Alan Page started running and was losing weight, and it made Grant mad, so we shipped him off for $100 to Chicago. But it almost seems generational. It's kind of what's going on now. But what does that say about this athlete now, that they have to be a little bit coddled more? Do they need participation trophies each week? I think it's got to be someone who can walk the line of that, because you still have to be in charge. You can't be everybody's buddy. And I get that, and I certainly saw that in Zimmer. But at the same time, you better get down on their level and see what they're going through. And I think that's kind of what Kendricks was saying.
Well, that's for it to come from Eric Kendricks, to me, has a lot of power, because Kendricks was actually, you know, I think he, you know, like Barr, he liked Zimmer and he liked playing for him. But, you know, I think he's trying to describe, it's hard to put words in your mouth when you're not there seeing their interaction. But I think that by him saying fear-based, it's kind of like, don't treat us like kids. Don't treat us like children. Have a little more respect for us if we're going to have respect for you. So, maybe the yelling and screaming, and that increased this year. They just had enough of it. And to me, it's like, Eric Kendricks is not a guy that's going to need a participation trophy. He's not going to need coddling. He is a tough, NFL football player, an elite NFL football player. So when he says something like that, it's not like, oh, it's just a spoiled modern player. I think it comes with a lot of weight when he says it. And it could be, that's time for a different type of voice. That's why I'm kind of saying it's like, that voice works in 2017 when you're number one. It maybe works in 2019 when you're beating the Saints down in New Orleans. But in 2020, 21, whenever it's not working and you're doubling down, I'm just guessing, but I'm sure he doubled down on the way that he would harp on him. And it wasn't producing. And at some point, they're probably like, hey, we need a new voice. Yeah. This one's not working. This one's keeping going down the same path. It's not getting out of us what we got whenever we had, all the fantastic players that they had on defense in 2017. So that goes into the whole needs to be a new voice, new direction. They had their turn. It's just someone else's turn.
Before I jump on to Spielman here, what do you think Zimmer's legacy is here in Minnesota? I mean, he's now the third in line behind Grant and Denny Green and then Zimmer for maybe years and maybe games and what have you, but probably the third most productive coach that they've had. What do you think his legacy is here, and how is he going to be remembered as we go forward?
Well, I think he's third in games, wins, and winning percentage. So I think, I was thinking about this. He's sort of like he'll be remembered sort of like Denny on the defensive side. Denny had in 1998 brought all the interest back into this team. I wasn't here at the time, but I've heard stories about how, there weren't sellouts in 97. People were kind of like disinterested in the Vikings, which is, I can't even fathom right now. So he comes in with that historic offense, highest scoring offense that had ever been up to that point. They go 15-1. They're on the doorstep of the Super Bowl. They fall short. Zimmer comes in, takes over the worst defense in the league. And then all of a sudden, 2017, they're on the doorstep. They should have won. They had the defense to beat that Philadelphia team, And not only do they lose that game, they get blown out, and then Philly has to come here and play a Super Bowl, spend the whole week in Minneapolis. So Zimmer, you know, good at a moment where greatness was right there and it eluded him and he wasn't good enough. So to me, it was like very good, just not good enough.
It's too bad because if he'd have won the Super Bowl, then that book would sell if you wrote it for him. You know, the book he's going to write. He's got so many interesting stories.
Yeah. I mean, talk about shelf life in the NFL. The guy who won that Super Bowl gets fired 3 years later. So maybe Doug Peterson ends up here in Minnesota, and
he's coming.
Wouldn't that be ironic?
He's coming in this week. I just saw before we got on that he's going to be talking to him before the week is out. Rick Spielman, 16 years. He's been general manager. I can't remember. Not that long, but he was part of the Triangle of Authority and been making decisions here for a long time. He seems like a real fixture around here. And I think the word coming into Black Monday was that he was going to stay and Zimmer was going to go. And then you never thought so?
No, I never once thought that. No, because I just didn't. But it didn't make any sense to me.
What do you think? What do you think about Spielman? Do you think that he got hurt this year by the fact? I mean, their draft picks didn't work out this year, and they didn't have George Payton helping him out. You know, he's down in Denver now making picks for them. Do you think that had any impact, or what do you think about Rick and his legacy?
No, because I think Darisaw is going to be a good player. The other guys, you know, Mond in the third round, I don't know that they do anything differently if George Payton's here. You know, some people have said, well, George Payton left too early. And well, to me, if you have a guy that's been working for you since 2007 and his right hand, and you feel that he hasn't done the job and you need a new direction, you need a new voice, a new hand on the wheel, you don't look to his right and do the right-hand man that's been there every step of the way, you know, because they worked in lockstep together for all those years. You're not going to get a whole lot different, I don't think. If you're looking for a change, you don't just go to the guy that's right beside him. So I don't think he would have been the GM here. I think the way he would have been the GM here is if he would have stayed around, the Vikings would have won a Super Bowl, and Rick would have said, you know what, I'm tired of these hours. I'm tired of that. To me, like when you talk to these guys, sometimes after they get let go and stuff, it's just like, I know it's tough on them, but man, in some ways they're getting their life back. You know, I know they don't want to leave on bad terms, but you know, part of you has to be, especially as you get older, it's be like, you know, can't tell me that Zimmer, this initial sting, but you know, this summer when he's sitting in Kentucky on the ranch and doesn't have to come back here, who knows what kind of COVID protocols and all that he's dealt with. I mean, if you look at, like we were talking about, all the things that happened to him, his second game as a football coach, Adrian Peterson gets indicted for child abuse down in Houston. His second to last game, this is sort of like, this is like the bookends of the eras that he dealt with. Second to last game where he needs, you know, in hindsight, he needs to win that Packers game to stay alive for the playoffs, which I think they would have kept their jobs if they had made the playoffs. Kirk Cousins has COVID, can't play, and they get blown out. So it's that full circle and all that stuff in between that he had to deal with too.
You wrote a story for today's paper about, you know, enumerating both GM possibilities, candidates, and coaching candidates. Do you got anybody that you like that stick out to you? That, I mean, like I said earlier, Peterson's coming in for an interview this week, and I'd like to see him get a real shot at it. I think he might be that calming influence that they're looking for at coach, and he's been there and he's kind of innovative, but he fell out of favor in Philly too. So, you know, I don't see anybody that I say, this is the knockdown, you know, this is the one that you got to grab for either head coach or GM, but maybe you know more about him than I do.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you got to look at just, you know, how is it going to work? Now that you got both openings, to me, it's like you want to look, you want to kind of pull from, as a general, just take general manager first. You want to kind of see what these other teams are, you know, like to me right now, the tree that you want to kind of attach yourself to and see what, you know, kick it and see if maybe some of that can come here is Kansas City. I mean, Kansas City with Andy Reid and what they're doing, Brett Veach and, you know, just what they put together. Now, granted, Patrick Mahomes doesn't come with you, but just how they operate does come with you. So, you know, I don't know him personally, but you see the name come up before. It's this Mike Borgonzi, assistant GM with the Chiefs. You know, I see that. Yeah, there's some talk about the Colts, the Morocco Brown from the Colts, director of college scouting. He's been there forever. I don't know if it hurts, but with the Colts getting what happened to him with the Jaguars and not making the playoffs, it's kind of leaves a sour taste whenever you're doing interviews. And certainly would have been better for a guy like that if they make the playoffs. Head coaches. I mean, I think Eric Bieniemy is going to be a head coach sometime. It's got to happen. I mean, Doug Peterson, the knock on him is, well, he had some issues legally whenever he was in college and early on in his coaching career. Bieniemy did. Some of the bar fights and the DUI and stuff in college and stuff like that. I don't know if that's been part of the problem that's stayed over his head whenever he's interviewed for the last 2 years over 12 openings. He interviewed for all of them, didn't get them.
You know, until I read your piece, Mark, I didn't know that about those that legal trouble that he was in. I also didn't know that he wasn't calling the plays. And I still wonder if that's an issue now. Maybe the Vikings need somebody that just can do the whole big picture and maybe hire a good offensive and defensive coordinator to let them go. I don't know. But, you know, Andy Reid is still calling the plays down in KC.
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. Yeah. But, you know, I did one of the Super Bowls, first or second one, I did a story talking to Childress about how does Andy Reid put together a game plan? And Childress was fantastic about how Andy Reid has the whiteboard and he has all the sheets and all he does. And it's such a collaborative it's not Andy Reid. Andy Reid's not a dictator. Andy Reid is very much – this is why Andy Reid is Andy Reid. He just takes in all these voices. And he said that the Eric Bieniemy is heavily involved in assembling a game plan. If he's not calling the plays. Doug Peterson was Andy Reid's offensive coordinator, went to Philadelphia, won a Super Bowl. John Harbaugh didn't call plays. He was a special teams coordinator. They don't have their face in a playbook, play sheet. He goes on to Baltimore. He was Andy Reid's special teams coordinator in Philadelphia. He goes on to Baltimore, wins the Super Bowl. Matt Nagy, I know Matt Nagy just got fired, but Matt Nagy came into Chicago, won Coach of the Year the first time. Really turned the Bears around. So I'm not buying he doesn't deserve a shot because he didn't call plays, because there are two guys before him didn't call plays and went and won a Super Bowl in Philadelphia. So, you know, and then another name that's would seem to really fit their wheelhouse now, you talk about a young offensive-minded guy whose star is about as high as it can be, is Kellen Moore in Dallas. I mean, they got the top-ranked scoring offense, top-ranked yards, very balanced. They rank high in both run and pass. You're gonna see not only will it be an offensive guy, but I think it's gonna be an offensive guy that embraces a passing offense going forward, because that'll be completely opposite of what we were kind of looking at now, or just happened. So he's a guy, but does he want this job? He might have his pick of other jobs. I don't know. It's how do you value? I don't think it helps Chicago by how Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields will be a good player, but how as bad as his year was, I just don't know that where does that put the attractiveness of that job? And how does Kirk Cousins affect this job? I mean, are you looking at Kirk Cousins as, hey, I got a guy who's got experience, he's got all the art, he can make all the throws, he can do all this, but he's that guy that's always 500. He got his head coach fired, or he contributed to getting his head coach and his GM fired. Do you want to go down that path with him? You know, especially if the financials are going to be so high. So it's a lot to have happen here over the next few weeks.
Mark Wolf said yesterday that they're going to be deliberate and, you know, make the choice right. Do you think are they under the gun here to get it done more quickly than that and move? Because there are a number of openings out there. I mean, Chicago's got a GM and a coach they're looking for. There's a number of people, coaches that fired. Somehow Brian Flores got fired down in Miami after the season they put together. You know, there's plenty of openings. Do you think they have to move quickly, or is this a little bit more of a marathon than a sprint here to get this done?
Well, you know, Brian Flores shouldn't have gone 1-7 to start the year, but I agree. He shouldn't have been fired. He's developing a young quarterback, and he did win those games at the end. He finished above 500. He deserved another year. You know, I'm not a fan of, like, okay, you're making a decision that you hope lasts more than 10 years. I agree with Mark Wolf that you should make it right, not make it fast. And if you lose a guy to Chicago, probably means he didn't want to come here. So these guys that are at the top, you know, the candidates, they're probably interviewing you as much as you're interviewing them. Because they know that they, like a Kellen Moore, I keep wanting to say Kellen Mond, Kellen Moore is a guy that's, if he doesn't get a job now, he's going to get it next year. Or if he doesn't get it next year, he gets it when he's 35. So, you know, to me, it's got to feel right. Like when the Rooneys brought Tomlin in 2000, after the 2006 season, nobody thought that he was going to get that job or that he was going to get a head coaching job. He didn't even think he was going to get a head coaching job that year. He told Childress, I just want to come back and make this defense better, worry about that later. Childress was like, you better go and talk to these people. And he also talked to the Dolphins on Huizenga's airplane out of the tarmac at Minneapolis St. Paul. So, like with Tomlin, you just don't think that. You know what I was going to say. But anyways, to me, get it right. You're doing 10 years. A 10-year decision shouldn't be made like in 10 days because you're afraid the Bears are going to hire.
Are you happy with the class of both GM and coaching that the Vikings can get it right and they are going to take a step forward, you think? I mean, I'm asking you to look at the crystal ball, but do you think the class of people out there is pretty decent to choose from in general?
Oh, I think there's always going to be, you know, there's rising stars. It's, you just hope that they're and the Wolves are sharp people, but they're doing it internal. So I would, Rob Brzezinski's going to play a big role in this. Andrew Miller, who's a baseball guy. You're talking about, these aren't like football coaches and GM types that are going to make these decisions. And the Wolves certainly aren't football heavy people. They're outstanding owners because they locate people, they give them time, and they give them all the resources they need to do their jobs. But can they pull the trigger on someone that's going to be good? Can they look down the road on a guy? Is he going to be good, you know, 10 years from now? Is he going to do this? So not having a search firm or kind of asking for any outside help makes you worry a little bit. But I think that, you know, Brzezinski's going to play a big role. So, yeah, we'll see.
Well, we'll put a pin in it right there for now. For take a break, the Viking territory breakdown. We're going to come back with a lot more talk about where the Vikings are going forward. But let's take a break, and we'll be right back. We're back with Vikings territory breakdown, and Mark Craig from the Star Tribune, plenty to talk about here. Mark. Yeah, that's how I feel about that dog barking about the season that we just saw. But just a couple quick notes on that Bear game. It almost seems like ancient history that thing's been played, and it's only a couple days ago. But another statistical gem from Cousins, and they actually got the win this time, but it wasn't really much to talk about. But it was a strange game. Well, anyway, let me talk about Cousins real quick. You said it earlier, and it is absolutely the number one decision for whoever comes in here and what they're going to do with this. And Kirk said to the media after the game that he's wants to be a Viking forever. Does he know that might require him to change his contract? for crying out loud. I mean, 20% of the salary cap to one guy. Do you want to win? Do you want a better offensive line? Well, you might have to give up a little bit. Do you want a better defense? Well, you might have to renegotiate. Do you want to win games? You might have to sacrifice, maybe get a vaccine, and maybe change your contract. I'm sorry. I hear that from him, and I just don't believe him right now. Yeah, you might want to be a Viking for life, but I think you want it on your terms. I want to see a little bit more of selflessness out of this guy. Maybe he's just happy.
I don't know that you're going to get a guy who's asked when he's sitting at a podium with all the cameras on him and it's going out to the whole world that he's going to negotiate his contract down and say, no, if I don't get my contract down, I want to move on to some other team. There's not a lot of sincerity when a guy is at, hey, do you want to finish your career as a Viking? I've never heard a guy when the cameras are on and everyone's watching say, not really. It's like Fred Smoot going back to the Love Boat. So the Love Boat edition here. And someone leaned in and said, because he and Tice were kind of going back and forth about something. And Sid leaned in and said, hey, there's a lot of speculation about he and Tice fighting about something. It had nothing to do with the Love Boat, I don't think. Sid leaned in and said, "What are you and Tice? You guys good?" And Smoot kind of went, "We're good." And then Sid came walking away, going, "Hey, it's all you a holes." I just asked him if he was fine. He and Tice are fine. So there's not a lot of sincerity in those situations. So my feeling is that Kirk, if someone's paying you this kind of money, I would stay here and be totally happy. I think you're wishful thinking. I think if you didn't get the vaccine, after all that they went through, there was a pretty good reason in his mind why he didn't get one, and he's not going to be getting one now. So,
So what do you do with it?
Well, I think that first of all, he can't count $45 million against the cap, and I think that he fixes that. So if you're coming in and you want to kind of win pretty quickly, you probably got to keep him because the new guy's going to come in. And I don't think you want to have Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen playing with Sean Mannion or Kellen Mond or whoever else they bring in off the street. And I don't believe that this is a year where a rookie quarterback is going to come in and be available where they're picking in the first round. So I think you kind of need Kirk, but you need him at a little more affordable price. And because he'll be working with an offensive guy, there's no way in my mind that he's going to be coming in working with another defensive guy. So the offensive guy is going to want someone, but I don't know how they work out that contract. That's why Brzezinski never loses his job, because he can figure this stuff out.
Yeah, but we're also in this problem where there's $45 million and the cap next year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so and also, there's a limit to his magic. I mean, the magic worked up to a certain point, and then you started seeing we can't afford, Xavier Rhodes and Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander the first time, Linval, and so there's a limit to what you can do. I also think the Barr contract was way too much, and I don't know if that's influenced by Zimmer being, so tied to Barr and relying on him so much to run his defense or do things in his defense. But that was a contract that was burdensome, to say the least.
Yeah. So isn't this the year, though, that a new GM and a new coach coming in have a little grace period where they could actually blow it up and they could trade Kirk for draft picks and sign a different free agent quarterback that you can bridge the gap until your next, younger guy comes in and takes over? Isn't this, I don't, for one, as a person who watches the game, don't want to watch rotten football. I don't want to see Justin Jefferson wasted and Cook in his prime, and Adam Thielen's only got a few years left. But this defense needs help, and the offensive line still needs some help. So isn't this the time where you can blow it up, or just doesn't the NFL allow you to even have that opportunity? You got to win now.
Well, no, these guys will definitely get a grace period. I mean, they'll get at least a year. I mean, yeah, nobody in Detroit. I mean, like Cleveland had a stretch there where they were firing guys, you know, GMs and coaches every year. But this was you know, like Dan Campbell wasn't being run out of town in Detroit this year, and he wins three games. So, yeah, they get a grace period. But I'm just thinking if a guy comes in, he's going to want and it all depends on what kind of trades out there. That, yeah, they're definitely – whoever gets hired is going to be looking at Kirk Cousins as their guy, but they're also going to be looking at what kind of trades can we make to either get a quarterback back in return and get some picks or whatever. But, yeah, they're definitely going to be looking at trading him and seeing what they can do at that position or to get someone cheaper or you know. I mean, Kirk is such a hard guy to figure out because he's a fantastic – he's a good quarterback, but there's never enough production there to justify what you're paying him. And he doesn't make the offensive line better, but if you have a good offensive line, he's better. So it's like I think the new GM has to be capable of two things. One, identifying who's his quarterback, doing a better job at that, and also a better job at identifying offensive linemen. That was a struggle, and they tried. They made a lot of attempts to pick guys and hit on a couple and missed on a bunch. And so whether it's like a free agency, like what the Browns did last year, they drafted a tackle, they went out in free agency, got another tackle, and their offensive line was good immediately. So you need that in your talent evaluators to get that offensive line set.
I just have one more question I want to ask about the Bears game, and it came at the end, the whole Justin Jefferson 17 yards to the record kerfuffle. Hey, you know, that's great. You know, you could make this record, but I don't, Zimmer could have done it for him. He didn't have to. He made the quote, "I don't care about records. I care about wins." And, you know, if you're winning, that's great, but you're not winning. So I don't care either way.
They won that game though.
Yes. However, it's not a record anyway, and that's the broader point here. Everybody got so bent out of shape, and maybe it was just what their culture was that they wanted to use on Zimmer as he was heading out the door. You know, he was like this and didn't do this for this guy. Well, the nicest guy in the world, Leslie Frazier, didn't do it for Adrian Peterson. Of course, he didn't know. Nobody knew when he could have won or he could have had the all-time rushing record for the season, a National Football League record, not just a team record like this. And this was 17 games rather than 16 games. I mean, settle down, everybody. What's the big deal there, Mark?
Leslie Frazier, because Adrian broke off that long run,
right?
And they got down into field goal range at the end of that game. They needed that to make the playoffs. They needed to kick that field goal to make the playoffs. To hand the ball to Adrian Peterson again. When I don't know how much time was left. There wasn't enough time to like hand him the ball again. And you know, my goodness, if he'd have fumbled that or not, you know. Time would have run out. Different situation. I'm old enough, and to me, the sense in the press room after that, or the interview room after that, was like, you know, I can't believe Zimmer and Cousins didn't get him the record. And then I'm thinking, like, you know, I lean more toward a Zim when it comes to, like, I'm not a record guy, but you know, in that type of game where, you know, the Bears have basically quit. It doesn't hurt to get your best player, your best offensive player or your star player that record. Now, there was a question about Jefferson was wide open on a play that Kirk threw to KJ. Well, that's the kind of, you know, thing where people were like, well, I should have thrown it over there. That to me is like, that's where we really show in the media that, you know, we're sitting, you know, 200 feet up in the air, and we don't have a 300-pound guy coming at us and getting ready to break us over his knee. We're not in the headset of like we're not seeing the field. So Cousins kind of talked about it. He goes, yeah, in a nice way. He said, you know, that was part of his progression was, you know, he has to like hurry and make his progression, and that's where he threw it. And KJ, instead of it being a great catch by KJ, it's, hey, why didn't you throw it to the wide open guy? So it just didn't unfold for him the way that the play unfolded. He just
Tom Brady went back on the field and got $1 million for Gronk.
That's right. That's what, yeah, Tom Brady can do that stuff. That's it was a great story. It's just like, you know, we're gonna do what we want to do.
It's so silly. I mean, the broader point for me is, I mean, everybody's talking about these records. Straight hands on the air talking about his sack record and TJ Watt tying it and all this and that. And it's like, it's in 17 games versus 16 games. I mean, there's got to be asterisks. I know I'm old enough to have gone from 12 to 14 to 16 games. You know, I'm maybe not 12. 14 to 16 games. So I, you know, and now they're all just records, but I don't know. Jefferson had the best response. He said, I'll just break it next year. And he will. He'll have 17 games to break it next year if Kirk is.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're going to see him, you're going to see the records reestablish themselves. But I'm sure, of course, in 1979, I think people had more. We probably had more important things to worry about. We were not looking at our phone every 5 seconds to see what was going on. It was 14 games from I think 1960 is when it went from 12 or 61 when it went from 12 to 14, and then went to 16 in 1978. So yeah, I'm sure in 1978 when there was a record that's like, well, you know, it's in 16 games. So you're going to see 17, and then eventually you will see 18 games. And as far as the sack record, that's only a record that's, you know, but we say an all-time NFL career record, well, since 1982. And for some of us, 1982 is not as long ago as it is for a lot of people who are talking about records. To me, so it's like, you know, the guy who coined the phrase sack, the head slap guy. Oh, gosh. Drawing a blank on his name.
I remember who you're talking about.
Yeah. So, so he's, you know, well before 1982. So there's a lot of guys. You know, the Purple People Eaters were all before 1982. So, you know, to me, it's records. It does seem like, you know, football records and numbers don't stand out as much as like baseball. Probably does. Although the home run record got kind of all screwed around when we were growing up, you know what the home run record was when you were growing up.
Right? Was it Reggie White? Was it? No, he wasn't that sack guy, that head slap guy. Anyway,
no, Deacon Jones.
Ah, there you go.
Senior moments.
Yes, and that only seniors will remember because half our audience doesn't know who Deacon Jones is or. Yeah. Certainly didn't see him play. A quick rundown of some players and what you think might happen to him real quickly. Anthony Barr, is he gonzo?
Yeah, I think he's gone. They're not going to give him, or he's not going to take whatever they decide to give him. But he's a good player. Just reached a point where he's not going to get any better. He's probably going to start going downhill and just not affordable, I think.
Harrison Smith, he's getting older, but he still has it. Can the team afford to keep him around?
Yeah, I think Harrison's a guy you keep because, like I said, I think it's going to be an offensive guy coming in. Defense, they're probably going to hire it's going to be the reverse of what Zimmer did. You're going to probably hire an established defensive coordinator or defensive mind. That defensive mind is going to want to, he's not going to use him probably the same as Zimmer, but he's going to want to tap into all the different things that Zimmer was able to do with Harrison Smith. And Harrison Smith has at least another year of being able to do that. So I think he stays.
Danielle Hunter, is he going to keep getting injured? Is this the mode of the future? Or are we going to get a season out of him?
Yeah, to me, it's two different injuries. I know that he's got that huge contract on the fifth day of the new year, the league year. It's $18 million. I think for what he is and what he was before he got hurt and what he was starting to be again in these six games this year, that he's a guy you pay because of just what you're going to get if he stays healthy. So I look at it maybe as two different injuries. The neck was fine when he came back and it became a pec. So he's a guy that I would keep around and you know, because if you get a pass rush like that, it sure does make a lot of things better.
Michael Pierce, Has he got, we haven't gotten much out of him in the 2 years he's been here. Is he somebody that they can re-sign and would want to stay here?
I would move on from him. Disappointing. Didn't give them what they wanted. Not that Zimmer and Spielman are making this decision because they're gone, but they didn't get out of him what they wanted. I think you could just move on. I would take Armand Watts over him.
Really?
If it's going to cost you more money. Look at someone else, to bring in, but Michael Pierce between, not playing for you the first year, which is fine. That was his choice. Got to make that decision for yourself or your family. But then to come back and only play 8 games and just not be available and not be very good when you're on the field or what you're supposed to be, just move on.
Adam Thielen, he got hurt at the end of the year, but he had surgery and he's already talking about how he's going to be back from it real soon. He's getting up there.
Yeah, I bring him back because I think he helps make Justin. I mean, he's a good player in his own right. Good in the red zone. I think he's still young enough and takes care of himself enough. And you bring him back for another year because especially if you keep a Kirk, either keep Kirk or you have an experienced quarterback, you're going to want to have I think Jefferson and Thielen back for another year because the offense could be better.
Yeah. What about Patrick Peterson? Said he'd love to be back here, but did that change with Zimmer leaving?
I don't think so. I don't know that he gets a whole lot of opportunities. I know he kind of is begging for the Cowboys to sign him. It's like one of his interviews was like, always wanted to play for the Cowboys. He goes, well, I still got some time. Like I still got some tread on the tires. And I like him. He played better than I thought he would. I don't think he gets a whole lot of opportunities. I wouldn't go into any bidding wars to keep him at his age, but if he's available and at the right price, yeah, I'd bring him back because as we found out, you can never have enough of those guys.
What happened in the Bears game when he made the pick six and nobody even tried to tackle him? Are they playing for the better draft pick? What the hell? What was that?
Nobody wants to be carted off on the last game of the year, Joe. Basically your car is parked heading toward the airport to warmer climate. You don't want to be in the training room with your ACL shredded. I don't know. I thought it was a heck of a run. I probably was looking more at him than the defenders. Yeah. I thought he took off like he was Trevon Diggs. I mean, that was some not only the ball skills, but the way he found his way to the end zone, I thought was impressive. But I could not watch this one back. I had a hard enough time watching it the first time. So
it was wise not to. Okay, we'll take one more quick break and do our Inside the NFL section where we talk about the playoffs, the Vikings aren't in, and what's going to happen and what Mark thinks is coming up. Come on back to the Vikings territory breakdown. All right, we're back with Vikings territory breakdown. Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Mark, our NFL insider, playoff pitcher. I had to watch. I went to bed when the Chargers went up by 15 points, with about 5-6 minutes, I said, this one's over. They're not gonna do it. And then I get up the next day and everybody said, oh my God, the end of that game. Did you watch the game at all?
I did. I checked out too, but I certainly went back and looked at it and read about it. Yeah, it sure looks like the Raiders were willing to do that tie, and then Staley calls a timeout, and it sort of changed.
Yeah,
I don't know if you can't read another coach's mind, but I'm thinking that maybe he should have been aware that the Raiders were probably willing to take this as a tie. It's like it would have been the absolute perfect fitting for the NFL this season. How close all the games have been. Almost like it's like a movie where it's like you don't believe it. Last game's a tie. People were talking about that. First of all, for the Colts to lose to the Jaguars, I mean that was embarrassing.
Yes.
So that's the first scenario that needed to happen. Then it was the Steelers, the beaten up, left for dead Steelers get into the playoffs by get that spot, and then these two teams could have tied to knock them out, and it almost happened. But the NFL has been a last second league season all year long, and it went right down to the very end.
I read a story on ESPN.com yesterday that kind of walked through all the permutations of whether or not bat timeout changed it. And in the Chargers-Raiders game, and essentially he said it didn't. And I think he's right by what you laid out. But you know it affected some things in some ways. I mean, it didn't look like they wanted to settle for the tie and, go home. But, he did say the Raiders had something to play for. If they win, they face a different team rather than a tougher team that they would have had if they finished.
I would agree with that because – and also, this Raiders coach – I mean, we've all said there's an opening in Vegas for a coach. I mean, this guy,
right?
He should get serious consideration to keep the job, I would think.
And then we got Daniel Carlson knocking through the 47-yarder, another stake in Zimmer's coffin. So,
what do you think of what would Al Davis have done from beyond if the Raiders would have taken that down and took a knee and took a tie? I mean, that's the just win baby would have just maybe that there would have been like the stadium might have cracked in half and tipped over.
That's a great point. Mark, who's going to knock off the Packers for us? That's all I care about the entire postseason going forward. Who is going to?
Yeah, okay. I looked at this. I picked them to win it all. So you doubted it. So first of all, I think the Eagles. Yeah. Yeah, the Eagles will beat the Bucks, or the Bucks will beat the Eagles. So Eagles are out. I think San Francisco could beat the Cowboys, but I'm going with the Cowboys to win. I think the Cardinals could do upset the Rams, so that would put Arizona at Green Bay in the second week. Can't see that happen. Can't see Arizona beating them. The Packers went to Arizona and beat them. I don't think Arizona's going to win at Lambeau. So then you got Dallas or Tampa Bay. And to me, Tampa Bay obviously can do it. They proved it. They'll have to do it now with fans in the stands if they come to Green Bay.
And
they got Tom Brady. I would love to see a rematch of that. That'd be fantastic just to see it again,
They got to get Fournette back or Leonard or their running back back.
Right, yeah. And the Cowboys, I think the Cowboys are the team that everybody says, "Oh, the team you don't want to play."
Flowers.
Yeah, I just like I like their pass rush. I like their the fact that they have all those takeaways. I think the offense is. I mean, the 50 points in the last two of the last 3 weeks. Yeah, the offense has kind of went through a dry spell and kind of a slump, but they also came into Minnesota and beat Zimmer's defense with Cooper Rush. So the Cowboys are a team. There's two of them: Cowboys and Bucks. I'd say the Bucks had a better chance just because of who they are and who they have. And then the Cowboys, because I think that that defense got rolling, they could actually put Rodgers in some – he wouldn't be that guy you're complaining about just standing there with his smug look and just surveying the field. He could be kind of running for his life.
Is he your MVP? You got an MVP book, right?
Yeah.
What did you think about that – thoughts on that one writer who called say he's not going to vote for Aaron Rodgers for MVP because he's the biggest jerk in the league. What do you think about that statement?
Well, yeah, Hub. I don't know how old Hub is, but Hub's reached the age. I'm probably at that age too, but I think Hub's been around forever. I don't know how old he is, but just said how he felt and the backlash that when you say stuff like that, when you have a pick like that. It's going to be what it was for him, and for the guy, for even for Rodgers to join in was something. But no, I'll disagree with him. I don't base it on if a guy's a jerk or if you think. I mean, first of all, you don't even know him. He seems like a jerk to some people. Clearly, is a confident to arrogant person seems to be. But is it? When you're that good and that great, I voted for T.O. For the Hall of Fame. I mean, it took him 3 years to get in. He obviously he had a hissy fit about it, didn't go to the ceremonies. But each year, whenever you cut from 15 to 10 to 5, and then you vote up or down on the 5. Well, the first 2 years that he didn't get in, whatever, I don't know if it was 10 or the cut from 15 to 10 or 10 to 5, I had him on my list as a cut down, and it might not have been a kind of a bigger jerk, perceived jerk than T.O. So I just I wouldn't factor that in. Just wouldn't do it. And we're not supposed to say who we vote for, but I've said before, Rodgers is my MVP. There's a lot of other guys that are certainly could be deserving. It's hard when it's always a quarterback, you know. But I think that, you know, the best record, just what he does for him, and he's the MVP.
You know, there's plenty of reasons. I mean, you should, like you're just saying, you got to vote for it. What they do on the field. There's plenty of reasons that you can name as reasons to not vote for them, like cheating or what have you, but being a smug, self-satisfied turkey lips is not one of them, I don't think. So I did like something he said, though. He had this comment, the grass is, you know, talking about if he's going to go somewhere. He said, the grass is greener on the other side if you water it. And I have never heard that before. I don't know if he's quoting somebody, but I kind of like that. I mean, it is. I mean, yeah, it can always look greener, but if you want it to be green when you get there, you better do something about it. So just I thought it was a nice comment.
Well, that's I mean, Kirk Cousins probably worked. There's probably no one that works harder to try and be a nice guy than Kirk Cousins. The way that Kirk kind of conducts himself, I mean, it's an A for effort. I mean, the vaccine problem, that was a no-win situation because he was dug in on his beliefs, and so much of the population was against him. So no matter how he tried to act, but he always tried to be a pleaser, you know, always trying to make everyone happy and kind of not be the jerk or whatever, or arrogant jerk. But I think people would take Aaron Rodgers over in his moxie, I guess, over Kirk.
Yeah. Before we go here, I want to ask you real quickly, you know, you did a story on Zimmer's 8 years and what happened to all these other coaches during his tenure, which was a nice kind of setup for what happened on Monday. And we saw Vic Fangio was already gone and he got less time, and Nagy's gone and all these coaches are gone. And maybe we touched on this earlier, but what do you think about the fact that, you know, coaches don't even get a chance? Are they really that bad? I mean, Fangio had waited this all his whole career to get this opportunity, and you know, boom, they come in with a new GM and he's gone. You know, I don't know.
That one surprises me, the fact that it wasn't done last year. I don't think that anyone thought that Vic Fangio was going to, you know, without a quarterback, was going to have this great season and lead him to the playoffs and be what George Payton wanted. I'm surprised George didn't make the cut last year, frankly, because that's when I would have thought it would have happened. But I mean, you're talking about, like I said earlier, Sean McVay gets hired in 2017 at 30 years old, 30 or 31. And now he's eighth in seniority. And the reason he's not seventh is because Sean McDermott is seventh and they were hired a couple days apart or something. So two guys that are hired in 2017 are seventh and eighth. And like I said, the guys above them are guys that are the, you know, they're the cream of the crop. Those are the guys that have won the Super Bowls. You know, Belichick and Sean Payton and Harbaugh and Tomlin and Reed. I think I'm missing one. But, you know, those are the guys that have won those Super Bowls.
This kind of leading up to a note you sent me right before we came on about Leslie Frazier. How in God's name is he mentioned again? And there's good reason for it, but do you think it's worthwhile? I don't think anybody's seriously talking about him coming back here because the wheel's already fired once. But what the whole churning of quarterbacks? I mean, Fangio should probably deserves another shot because his situation wasn't there. I mean, what are your, I mean, maybe you can tell our viewers what your note was about Frazier.
Oh, no, I just said it was ironic that on the, you know, the day that Zimmer, you know, gets fired or his last game, Buffalo has a defensive coordinator. Now, people will say, you know, Sean McDermott's a defensive-minded head coach. Well, Leslie still is heavily involved in the defense, calls the plays on game day. There was a stretch earlier when they were together that where McDermott took the play calls, but you know, Leslie's been calling the plays. And they, number one in points allowed, number one in yards allowed, fewest points, and fewest third downs allowed. Now, talk about a full circle. When Leslie got fired, they were last in all those things. Zimmer comes in as the fixer, and he did fix it. But at the end, and he leaves, his defense was the first in Vikings history to give up 400 points back-to-back years. And that happened before the 17th game. They had allowed 409 through 16 games. So you're talking about one of the worst two-year stretch of points allowed. And it's not just because it's 16, 17 games. I mean, when they first came in, their first two or three years or whatever, they allowed over 400 points in 14-game season. So, you know, if you're bad, you can be bad in 14, 16, 17 games. And I just thought that, you know, Leslie, he got interviewed for the Houston job last year, probably would have been a better hire than who they hired. He'll get some interest, I'm sure, somewhere, but you know, it wouldn't be here. I mean, you could sell it to people like us in the media because, you know, there was not a better human being than Leslie Frazier. And it's terrible to see. You know, when a nice guy does finish last and has to be fired, it's hard. But people talk about him going to the Bears. I don't think he moves the needle in Chicago, and he played on the 85 Bears team. So, but that would be a team maybe he goes to. But, you know, I think at his age, I think he's going to be a defensive coordinator probably the rest of his career.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Doesn't the fact that he helped build that defense back up in Buffalo – after, you know, striking out here, say people like him and people like Zimmer are better defensive coordinators, and that's because they're excellent at that job. Wouldn't you think to just install them there and maybe head coach is just not the gig for him? Because I don't know. Go ahead.
I mean, a lot of things happened, you know, like, okay, when Leslie was when they were like number one in run defense, you know, all those consecutive years when Leslie was defensive coordinator and I took over for Childress, they were younger and they, you know, people said, well, it's a kind of a simple Tampa 2 scheme, not a lot of creative blitzing and all that stuff. Well, they had fantastic players that just dominated their positions. They had Jared Allen, Kevin Williams, Pat Williams, you know, guys that were, you know, kicking butt at their positions. They didn't need to do a lot of fancy things. Well, at the end, when they kind of went south on them, those guys had gotten older and weren't the same players. And so a lot of it is, whenever you're trying to win and your cornerbacks at the end of the year are, you know, Benny Sapp, who you signed off the street, Marcus Shirelles, that was a punt returner that, you know, gave a yeoman's effort at corner, but he had to play those last, you know, down the stretch. And so a lot of it becomes, you know, personnel, which is, I think, why you see whenever it reaches a certain point, not only does the coach go, but the GM has to go as well.
Well, we're going to see a lot of different things happening in the next few weeks with the Vikings and certainly the NFL. And Mark and I are going to be back here to talk about it next week and throughout the rest of the season for sure. So, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's already crazy. And Mark, you're going to be out there covering stuff all week for what's happening at not Winter Park, but TCO. There's probably just as much interest now in the Vikings as like you had said earlier, if they went to the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I think might be more considering that, the next, you know, if they make the right decisions, the next 10, 15, 20 years could be a certain 10, 15 for the GM, maybe 10 for the coach. I don't know. If you get the right guy, you know, it could be a long-term deal. So, you know, future of the franchise is in these next 2, 3, 4 weeks.
we'll be back here for sure to rip it or praise it, whatever the case may be. So, well, that's it for this week for Vikings Territory Breakdown. Stop back next week. We'll have another one. Watch the playoffs. Should be fun. If this year more than other, the games are going to be great to watch because the season has been. There's so many close games. But thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Mike Wolden behind the scenes. Thanks to Mark. And thanks to Joe Johnson. For all you folks out there, skull.